Hi there, members, and welcome to the club. Let's go to our Trello board and get stuck straight into the session. Just make sure I'm on the correct microphone. I am. I'm going to share screen and head straight on over. So this card describes the session that we're going to be doing today. On the agenda is an updated daily focus for the coming week. Going through the changes to the membership again, just to make sure that everyone gets to hear that. And also moving into the main topic of today, which is managing difficult patients. And I'm changing removing to ejecting, because I like the word better. Ejecting difficult patients from your practice. Very quickly, let's go through the daily focus coming up. So as you know, we've been moving through the four growth stoppers each week as the daily focus. We started off with the first contact. How many new callers contact your practice? Why do they call? Are they converted to an appointment? And how to make that first contact more and more effective as an experience for your patients and potential new patients. The following week, we went through the non-clinical experience. And so when they turn up to your practice, what experience do you deliver inside the waiting room and with the receptionist? This coming week is all about the clinical experience. And again, those first 4 seconds, the ones that were also relevant for the receptionist, that in within the first 4 seconds, we decide whether we like somebody or not. Short time, I know. But within the first 4 seconds that you meet eye contact, you put a big smile on your face, have open body language and say something really welcoming, those first 4 seconds can be quite impactful in a positive way for your patients. So also how to build rapport inside the surgery, make the comfort level of treatment improved from what that patient may have experienced in the past, and how your explanation of dental conditions and solutions can be improved. So you're providing a very positive clinical experience for the patient, closing off one of those four growth stoppers if you provide a great experience. And so you will see the daily focus coming out as of tomorrow morning for the coming week. I've got a few suggestions around improving in each of those areas. And so use the week well for that. Coming back to our agenda, we've ticked that one off. The changes to the membership I've already discussed before, and if you've heard it all before and you're watching this on recording, fast forward the next couple of minutes. I just want to make sure everyone's on board and has no questions around the changes to the membership. Now, as you know, the club membership has been a free service from late April. Some practices that are with us today started way back then. I think there were 21 practices that joined up at the start. We've now got 61 practices as members, which is absolutely wonderful. And I'm loving presenting these weekly live sessions to you in addition to the other services that we're providing. As of the end of October, so the free service goes through to this month. This current month is your month to re-sign, re-register as a member. The reason why you need to re-register is because we are now charging for the membership. There are two levels of membership. Both are very, very affordable, and I'm going to quickly take you through those now. And you need to re-register because I never got your credit card details at the start. And so this is an opportunity for you to have a look at the two levels of membership, see which one suits you the best, opt for that, and then enter in all your details and your credit card details, and then you can remain in this position of receiving really wonderful insights and strategies to implement into your practice every week, and also the doing sessions and daily focuses, a whole bunch of additional stuff. So if you go to the julieparkerpracticesuccess.com or .com.au, it doesn't matter, to the website, on the left-hand side is our menu. Click on to the club and you're taken through to the explainer page about the club. You know what it's all about though. You've been a member for a while. And if you scroll down all the way to the bottom, you will see the two options, the two levels of membership that are on offer for you. The first one is the club basic. Just $49 a month, such a small amount of money to get these kind of sessions into your inbox every week. So you have access to the weekly live sessions. You also have full access to the library of previous live session recordings. That's all housed within the Club Hub. That's the members only page. Hopefully you've had a chance to go on to that page and have a look at the display there. You've also got inclusion into the Club private Facebook group. Now, even though new members coming in at the Club basic level won't have access to the Julie Parker Practice Success online courses, while you still have it, you will remain enrolled in that. For all of the existing courses and any future ones that I do and record and we load up onto the online courses portal, you still have access to all of that. We're not going to take any of that away. So if you wanted to go ahead and pay the $49 a month for all of this value, just click on Get Started and enter all of the details. As of the end of October, if we haven't chosen a level, you will stop receiving all of the email communications from me unless you wanted to join up at a later stage. If you would like to spend $497 a month for your club membership, this is what you get. You get everything from the club basic membership, but on top of that, you get two pretty amazing things that can really shift you as a personal performer and your practice's performance. You can really shift to a different level of success. Every month, you'll be entitled to 1 hour of one-on-one coaching time with me. That's around practice strategy, team strategy, a little bit of mindset stuff. You also get 1 hour of coaching time with Charles Coves, and that's where you can really start to make some enormous shifts and changes within your own self, increasing the level of passion that you bring to your work and to your life, and improving the level of enjoyment that you get from the experience of this thing we call life. And so that is a wonderful level of membership if you really want to get into things and create big shift and change. So $49 a month or $497 a month, you make the choice, click on Get Started, and away you go. The Club Hub page, of course, the members only page, you get an easy link into the live sessions and any doing sessions that we've got. You've got all the previous recordings that you can scroll through there. Doing sessions, live presentations from Charles, our special guests, and in the past, as you know, we've had Andrew Lee of Health Practice Digital and our special guests, Les and Jonathan from MySmile Sim. And all the downloads that I mentioned throughout all the live sessions, they're all listed there under downloads as well, and the link to the Facebook group. So one of the previous special guests was Les and Jonathan. I'm going to go back to our... Oh, one more thing about the membership. If you are in a financial position where you haven't been able to get back into a financial affluent space, financially affluent space, we have got a discount code for you, which entitles you to a further 6 months of no charge membership. It's for the club basic level, and all you need to do is type the word assist in capitals into your membership. So register, you'll still be asked for your credit card details and everything, because it just gives you the next 6 months at no charge. That's the discount code. So if you need that, please feel free to use it. And I'm just going to drag this one up here. The doing session of My Smile Sim, recorded it just earlier today. And within that recording, I've got three main elements. So we've got the how to implement My Smile Sim, how to register for it and get the first few emails coming through. Then we've got Andrew Lee from Health Practice Digital talking to us about how we can market that as a really effective way of boosting new patient numbers through to the practice who want aesthetic work, and how to appeal to your existing client base and have them take a before selfie, get the after picture of what they would look after they had whitening or gaps closed in there or straightening of teeth, and start to pique their interest on what's possible for them and their appearance within in terms of their smile. And I also talk about the systems that you can develop as a practice in order to roll this My Smile Sim out effectively. I've got a bit of editing, chopping and changing around that to do, because I want it to be nice, tight, short. And so after I've done my edit, that's when it's going to be available to you as a recording, and I will email you the details of it when it is ready. Let's get into the guts of today, which is managing difficult patients and ejecting difficult patients from your practice. Making sure I'm recording. I always get this little fear. Maybe I'm not recording. As I have been doing lately, I've got a little PowerPoint presentation here that will help you and your watching pleasure, so you don't just have to be looking at my face the whole time. So managing difficult patients, I first of all want to thank one of our members for raising this as an issue in their practice. And it's a very difficult thing to manage sometimes, because hopefully it happens very rarely that you have a truly difficult patient in front of you. But when you do have one, you do want some sort of awareness of how to manage that situation well. And that's where today's topic came from. So thank you to our wonderful member. First of all, let's have a quick look at why patients actually become difficult. As you know, patients come into the dental practice with varying levels of anxiety around a dental visit. They've got a whole bunch of memories that have been horrendous. You've heard about all the ones of, I've had a tooth pulled and the dentist was kneeling on my chest to do it. So both real and imagined experiences in people's world. And it's not the most comfortable thing to go through. Patients are lying back in a vulnerable space. They've got getting needles and they're getting a lot of water collecting in their mouth and all the very many things that detract away from the experience of coming to the dentist. They also know that financially it's not the cheapest way of managing one's health, that it does come with a price tag. So there's various reasons why people can attend anxious. And when they do attend anxious, there's a few things that are resulting behaviours from that. One of them is poor listening. I've said this story before, some of you may have already heard it, but I remember back a number of years ago, I needed to have a procedure done on a particular tooth. And it was because I was refusing to have this tooth out. It had had a previous root canal, then a previous failed root canal, and then a post-core crown set up, and then one of the roots fractured, and the fixation was getting all infected. And I just did not want this molar tooth out. I couldn't face the thought of it. And the dentist that, I'll stop sharing so I can better engage with you. And the dentist that was going to be treating that tooth, I was working at this particular practice, and he always took very special care in explaining everything to patients. And so I was in that patient position with decades of, but at that stage, it was 2 decades of dental awareness and of work in the industry. So I knew what he was talking about. However, this time it was happening to me. He was describing to me how we're going to go and do flap surgery, take out that one portion of the root that had a fracture in it and leave the rest of the tooth there, and just fingers crossed, we'll see how much longer that tooth would last. What I was intrigued about was the minute he started talking about the flap surgery, I started thinking about how am I going to move through this physically and emotionally myself. And that's when I just went completely deaf to the explanation that was being delivered. I know dental. I know about dental procedures. Yet I still, after he had carefully explained everything after 10 minutes, I had to say to him, I'm so sorry. I didn't hear a word you said. Can you please explain it all again? So poor listening is a resulting characteristic of coming in anxious. And I was able to say to this dentist, can you please explain that whole thing again? Because I knew him. Most patients wouldn't feel that was a polite thing to do. And so they would just nod and walk out and then think, what the hell was being said? I don't know what was being said. So it's a lovely insight. And it's something to be important to be aware about as a dentist and a dental provider, that you, all the words that you're saying to the patient, they may seem to understand everything. They may seem to be engaged with that whole conversation. It doesn't mean they are. Very important to support all of your discussions with patients with brochures and links to videos and website pages that are on your site to help people understand what's going on for them. The other resulting characteristic from poor listening is, and from coming in anxious, is quick to aggression. If you're already anxious, you are heightened in your sensibility, and it doesn't take much sometimes for people to be arced up and become immediately aggressive. Sometimes people manage these sort of challenging times that I have to be bold and fight for my space in order for that person to treat me with respect. You know, and this is just the way we're all made up. We're all made up wildly differently. Some people respond to anxiety by cowering in the corner. Other people become aggressive. So that's one of the reasons why our difficult patients can become difficult. And the other one is emotional upset. I don't know if, I'm sure you guys have had this experience where the patient seems to be moving through the treatment quite happily, and then all of a sudden a little tear rolls down the side of the patient's face and you're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea they were uncomfortable or going through some stress with this. And so emotional upset certainly is also a result of anxiety, and they just might be very good at hiding that anxiety, but you don't realize it until that little tear comes down. The other reason why patients become difficult is very simple. Unsatisfied expectations. They've come in with one set of expectations. You have delivered something different to that that has not pleased them, and therefore they get upset. This is an important element of the way you manage patients, because you will never be able to know what the expectations of your patients are. You could even ask a patient, what do you expect from today's treatment? And there'll be a bunch of stuff that they say because they can identify it and it comes to mind. Then there's a whole bunch of stuff that they can't identify because it's stuff that I'm going to treat you gently. I don't want you to hurt me. So it's kind of stuff that they may see as obvious, and so therefore they don't say it out loud. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff they don't realize is an expectation until it's not met, and they start getting riled up and they think, oh, I'm not happy with that. That's not what I expected. Because of the fact that you will never be able to identify truly all of the expectations the patient has, it is important for you to see this as an opportunity to place the expectations on the patient. So you tell them what to expect. We do tell patients generally what to expect before they even come to us. And so if they're searching for a dental practice and they jump on your website and you seem friendly, up to date with technology, you've got your faces there, maybe a video of you guys talking, and you're like, yeah, I'm building a bit of a relationship with these people already. They seem really upbeat. And your website and all of your advertising and social pages and promotions, if they're all very, for example, focused around aesthetics, you'll go there expecting an aesthetically pleasing practice. If it's all around emergencies, you maybe go there and expect to see quite a number of people in the waiting room and churning through the numbers through the patients through the waiting, through the surgery. So we do provide a series of expectations in the way we are out there in front of patients' faces. But actually setting the expectations for the appointment time itself, that has an enormous amount to do with the receptionist. And so when, I'll give you an example of a new patient ringing up, and we've all had these people, I've got a toothache, I want the tooth out today. And so the patient rings up, and they speak to the receptionist, I've got a terrible toothache. Receptionist says, oh gosh, I'm so sorry, I've got an appointment time at 2 o'clock. Yes, I'll be there at 2, great, I'll see you then. Not good enough. Because when that patient turns up, if that dentist can't take that tooth out, the patient will be upset. I've wasted my time coming here. I could have gone somewhere else. I don't understand the reasons why you can't take the tooth out, and they're upset. A better way of managing those sort of callers, and for anybody booking into your practice for the first time, is to tell them what to expect. And therefore the phone call would be more like, I've got a toothache, I'm so sorry to hear that, can you come down at 2? I can come down at 2. Let me tell you what the process will be. We're going to bring you in, I'll have you fill out a form. So if you can come 5 minutes earlier, that would be fantastic. When you go through to the surgery, you'll meet Dr. Kevin. And Dr. Kevin is going to be assessing your tooth and your toothache, maybe take an x-ray. So there's going to be a consultation fee of $68 plus an x-ray of $45. If we can take the tooth out on the day, we do. Often it is because it might be a very complicated extraction and you need to be referred off. Maybe you don't need an extraction at all and that's not the diagnosis for the tooth. Or maybe the tooth is quite infected, and by the sound of your toothache, it is quite infected. And the amount of infection there won't let the local anaesthetic work. And so therefore, to have a comfortable extraction, we can't do it on the day. We do it after a course of antibiotics in a week or so. And so you're telling the patient up front what to expect coming in. And so then you are more likely to be able to meet or hopefully surpass expectations of the patient if you're the one that's planted them there yourself. You know exactly what their expectations are if you've told them what those expectations are. And so unsatisfied expectations can certainly play an enormous role in patients becoming difficult because they're unhappy. The kind of, if you're doing all of these things right, the kind of reasons why people become dissatisfied or difficult is other blue things. Maybe a tooth just refused to, you know, comply with treatment and it ends up failing after a root canal and a crown and a this and a that and a whole bunch of money and time was spent and it's all of a sudden now you've got to extract the tooth. Now I'm upset. Maybe it's because there was a glitch in the system and they turned up to their appointment time but had been cancelled by somebody else and there was no time for them and we had to push them out of the surgery without seeing them. Maybe there was an account snafu. Maybe we accidentally overcharged them twice. All of these other things that aren't planned, that are just glitches in the system, those sort of things are going to happen as well. And so let's look at how we can manage these sort of situations when it's outside of unsatisfied expectations and just general anxiety. A few points to consider. Point number one, you know what? It's inevitable. Nothing's ever 100%. You will never be able to manage all of your patients 100% successfully all the time. It's just not going to happen. And I love this, and many of you would probably have seen this before. The expectations and then the reality is a huge mess. This is a wonderful example of the best laid plans can go awry. And it happens. It happens in every industry, in every life, in every well-planned goal. The reality seems to be quite a bit different from the expectation. And so make sure that you bring that into your soul as, I don't expect everything to be 100% all the time. With our very best of efforts, there's going to be muck-ups. And so when the muck-up does happen, you can, instead of saying to yourself, this should never have happened, you're saying to yourself, yep, it happens. And there's a saying on one of the programs that I've seen, and what's it called? What's the saying? It is what it is. It is what it is. It's a lovely acceptance when things go wrong. It's not ideal. I wouldn't choose this, but hey, it is what it is. So let's get to it and try to find a solution around it. The next point to consider is a defensive versus empathetic response. Our natural response when someone arcs up at us is to arc up back. That's just the way we function as human beings. However, if you can move yourself from defensive response, if you can feel the hackles come up and go, no, that's not going to work, I'm choosing the empathetic response, you will be better served. Stephen Covey has said, when you show deep empathy toward others, their defensive energy goes down and positive energy replaces it. That's when you can get more creative in solving problems. And with difficult people, the whole focus is to put their difficulty down. And you do that by increasing your level of empathy. So if you're finding that they're not calming down, there's two things. Increase your level of empathy, and I'll get onto the second point in just a couple of slides. So becoming defensive will never work. Empathy is what meets difficulty to end up with a better outcome. Also, delay the solution. Quite often we all feel, whether it be a boss with an employee concern, or whether it be a dentist with a patient concern, or whether it be us with a difficult patient concern, we feel like in the moment we have to provide a solution instantly. That's just not the case. Any solution is going to be better if you're given the opportunity to consider the different options that are out there for you, and also maybe bounce some ideas off somebody else or a group of other people to get an even greater result than you would ever have imagined yourself. And so have a one-liner that you can say to the patient that gives you that bit of time. So give yourself time to consider the best solution and to collaborate with others. Never argue. Never, ever argue. Because what happens? You've got bad butting up against bad and bad feeding bad. And I've got here, don't feed the aggressive communication. If you want the communication to continue down an aggressive path, then absolutely argue, because that's the one guarantee. If you do start arguing, you will never argue somebody into agreeing with you or to calm them down. That just never happens. So have a rule within yourself never to argue. Even if you start to argue, you can always pull yourself up and you can say to the patient, "What? I'm not going to get anywhere approaching it like this, the situation like this. Let me try a different tactic." So never argue. Also, don't be afraid to apologize. An apology does soften the other side quite often. It's an acceptance of responsibility. And I'm not saying you're accepting responsibility that a filling broke and it was your fault, or a crown was the wrong color and it was your fault. What I'm saying is that you're sorry that they are upset. When we turn up to our practices every day, our intention is to satisfy our patients and have them really happy about their experience with us. And so it's quite legitimate to say, "You're upset. That displeases me. I'm sorry about that. I wish that wasn't the case," because our intentions are wildly different. So never be afraid to apologize and say to the patient, "I'm so sorry that you're upset. Let's get to the bottom of it." It will help them think that you're on their side. And until you get on their side fighting for them, they will remain upset. And I'll tell you more about that in a minute. Also, this is a really key one in all elements of your dental practice. Don't come in stressed. If you come into work stressed, any little difficulty with a colleague, a boss, a patient, you'll be very quick to temper because you've got a short week. You're already carrying the load. So try to shake off the stresses of outdoor life when you come into the practice every day. I know that it's a difficult thing to do, but after some practice, you can see your workplace and the team that you work with as a lovely relief from the outside stresses. At least here, I don't have time to, I haven't got the opportunity to follow up on all the stresses and manage things and create goals and plans around all those things. I'm here to work. And so I can, at the very least, during this time, be relieved of all the stresses and come in nice and fresh and positive. And that will certainly help you manage a difficult patient should they come up, because your first response won't be impatient with them. It is also a most crucial time to have great communication skills. And so make sure that you do active listening. So when someone's upset, they're saying, "Listen to me, listen to me, listen to me." And so make sure you do practice active listening. So if the patient says, "I turned up to the appointment time, you didn't have it in your book, I wasted my time." So you'd made an appointment time, but when you turned up, it wasn't in our book. So active listen, repeat back to the patient what they said to you to make sure that you've got the message clear, but also so the patient knows you've heard them. Practice good eye contact. Be sincere. Look the patient in the eye when they're complaining or becoming difficult, and when you're explaining things as well. Look them in the eye. Have good communication. Open body language. Don't have an aggressive stance when you're trying to be empathetic. Have a soft stance. Open body language. And have a look of care and concern over your face. Don't be like, "What are you talking about? This place is awesome. Why are you complaining?" Have a look of concern. "Oh gosh, our intention is to make you happy and you're not happy. Tell me more. Tell me more." And that's a lovely sentence. "You're unhappy. Tell me more about that." It's lovely and open-ended and just kind of gives them permission to tell you exactly what they're upset about. Also, at the very last point of consideration here is that if that patient is truly aggressive, it is time to get them out of the practice. That's the goal. So you want them to, they turned up sometimes to be upset in front of other patients in the waiting room. And if that happens, that's okay. I mean, a lot of patients will be quite empathetic to you guys having to deal with somebody so aggressive. And so even if they're, don't be too concerned about what they're saying, because we all know that there are people that are very difficult to please in this world, and this just might be one of them. And they've got their own experiences with your practice. And if they're still turning up today, that means they've been happy with it. And so give them the benefit of the doubt that they can assess the situation just as a tricky one for you guys. And so don't try to defend yourself too much for the gallery to see. Still move down your systematic path, your three-step response, which I'll go through soon. And keep in mind, I've just got to get through these three steps and then that patient can leave the practice. And the best way to do that with a patient is to also say towards the end of that conversation, listen, Jerry, you're very upset. You've explained to me why. What I'm going to do is this. I'm going to speak directly with Dr. Kevin, and we're going to come up with a solution for you. Leave it with me, and I will call you on Tuesday or the next day or this afternoon, whatever sense of urgency you believe it has. And that puts a very lovely, this communication is over, but the solution's not here yet, but we've made a plan of wanting to deliver you this wonderful solution. So do try to think to yourself, when someone's constantly repeating over and over and over again, this is why I'm complaining, this is why I'm upset, this is why I'm aggressive, they will continue doing it until they feel understood. And if you say, what I'm going to do with this, I'm going to speak to somebody and get a solution for you, you're saying to them, I understand why you're upset. So it relaxes them enough that they feel they can leave. They've done their job, they've handled the problem over to you, and you've got it. So this is the three-step response that I suggest for complaint management. Number one, acknowledgement. Number two, investigation. And number three, follow-up. Let's go through these one at a time. Acknowledgement. This has proven to be true in my dealings with patients for my 30 plus years in the industry. People will maintain and increase their level of upset until such a time that they feel understood. They maintain their upset because they feel like you're just not getting it. You're not hearing me. So now I'm going to have to yell it to you. Now I have to repeat it over and over again until you get it. And so this is where defensiveness doesn't work and excuses don't work. They're not solutions for this person. So once they've spoken to you, and if they start to talk about what they're upset about, but you're jumping in with the reasons why, they will speak louder and they will keep repeating themselves. They won't hear you. They'll just feel interrupted. So what I'd like you to do is say, you're obviously upset and I want to be able to help you. Tell me more about what's going on for you. And then you just be quiet. All your wonderful communication skills there, you're looking them in the eye, you've got a look of care and concern, you've got open body language, and you're listening to them. You're not talking, you're listening to them. Let them get that story out of their mouth. They won't stop until they get it out of their mouth, let me promise you. So let them get it out at the very start. Then repeat the patient's version back to them, stating, I understand this is what you're finding upsetting. Because maybe they weren't upset about the fact that they missed an appointment, that there was a missed appointment time. Maybe they're upset because of the fact that they lost some sort of financial deal because they were turned up to the practice instead. Maybe they're upset because they just wasted their time. Maybe they're upset because they had a minor car bingle on the way to the appointment time that was never in existence. So get to the real reason why that patient's upset. So when you can say, I understand that this is why you're upset, or this is what you're finding upsetting, at least they can say yes. Or no, you didn't hear me. It's this. This is why I'm upset. So clarify that. Repeating the issue back to the patient also provides clarity. And then say to the patient, I appreciate why you're upset. I want to help you. Because the truth of the matter is, in most situations, apart from the random ones that are just extreme, most of the time, if you understood the situation like the patient understands the situation that's upset them so much, you would likely be as upset as well. You've got additional information that makes you say to the patient in your head, you shouldn't be upset because this and this and this happened. The patient is not privy to that. So given the patient's level of understanding of the situation, you would likely be as upset if you only knew that. So saying to the patient, I appreciate why you are upset, is not saying you should be upset. I accept that you're upset. It's just, I appreciate why you're upset. Again, you're helping the patient feel understood. And until they feel understood, they will not reduce down their level of difficulty or aggression. And then say to them, you frame it. I'm here to help you. I'm not here to argue with you. I'm not here to provide excuses to you. I'm not here to ignore you. I'm here to help you. So I understand why you're upset. I would like to help you. Next step is a solution. So the investigation portion is tell the patient to leave the situation in your hands for you to investigate further with the view resolved so the patient is happy. Say all this to the patient. When they're still there in front of you and you have actively listened to what their issue is, you've repeated back to them what their concern is, and you've said to them, I appreciate why you are so upset. And you say it with genuine care. I appreciate why you're so upset and I want to help you. I want to find a solution that's going to make you happy. But then you won't be able to come up with a solution straight away by yourself. So always know that it's under usual circumstances with somebody who's that level of upset, you're not going to be able to come up with a solution in that moment because your brain will be screaming, oh my God, what do we do? What do we do? And you won't have all the information most likely either. Most of the time you have to go back and get feedback what happened in the surgery or go and chat with the receptionist what happened with her communication with them. So usually it does take a level of investigation. The purpose is to encourage the patient to have trust that the issue will be managed as best as possible. You really want that patient to feel that you got them. You've handed me your issue. I care as much about your issue as you do. So you can relax because now you've given it to me. But I'm going to really take care of it. I'm going to make sure it gets solved. This way, they can reduce their upset as they've transferred their responsibility over fixing the problem to you. They've gone as far as they can. Now it's my turn to do my bit. As a result, they normally feel much calmer. And the third step after you've gone through acknowledgement and investigation is follow-up. After investigating the issue with relevant staff and discussing the appropriate resolution, contact the patient by phone or face-to-face and recap the issue. Now, I'm saying by phone or face-to-face, never ever by email or text. When someone is upset, you need to be hearing in their voice or seeing in their general appearance whether the solution you've come up with is actually going to make them happy or not, or actually going to appease them or not. You can't do that with email and text. Email and text, remember that they're only words, and of the effective communication, we've got words at 7%. They contribute 7% of a person's understanding of what you're talking about, other words. The rest of it, of 97%, sorry, the 93%, where's my math? The remaining 93% is all your voice tone, how you say things, how you appear, your physical stance, your body language, everything else. And so text messaging and emailing is the least effective way of communicating something important to a human being. It must be over the phone or face-to-face. Recap the issue, then offer the resolution. Direct one-on-one conversation is ideal, so you have rapport. This is the other element too. We've gone through rapport in the past and it's been part of daily focuses that have been sent out as well. When you are trying to have somebody get that you're there for them and that you've got strong empathy and caring for them, then you fall into rapport with them. And hopefully they will likewise come into rapport with you too. So if they're speaking a bit too loudly, then you start to bring your voice down. They may match you if they feel like you're on the same side as them. And you can only build rapport. You cannot build rapport at all over text message or email. You can only do it over the phone and face-to-face. It is important that there is a resolution that suits both the business and the patient. So I'm not saying put the business at a loss so we make the patient happy. Making the patient happy isn't the be all and end all. We do need to make sure that we're making sound decisions that are good for both. A poor attempt to appease the patient will bring their aggression back up again, and it will be difficult to repair the situation. So if they've already been upset, and you finally got them to a point where they can hand their issue to you and they're quite happy to do that, if you come back with a very measly thing, you know it's not going to appease them, that's going to bring their aggression all the way back up again, because I have to speak loudly and repeat myself often because you obviously don't understand me. So you do need to bring about a solution that's truly going to appease that patient. Also, don't be afraid of unhappy customers. This has been my experience as well. There's so much anxiety and trepidation and resistance around dealing with following up with an unhappy patient. You know, you sit there and you go, okay, this is what I'm going to say. I'm about to ring them now. I hope they're happy with the solution. Oh my God, oh my God. And you put off the discussion again and again and again. And finally, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You're like, I told them I'd get back to them today. I have to ring them now. But every single time, after your successful management of a difficult patient, you feel fantastic. And it helps you better treat those sort of patients and situations next time and the next time and the next time. So embrace these, because your successful management of these situations often also leave you with a deeper positive relationship with that patient. A lovely example of that is when you've had a fight with a friend in high school and you've had a huge blow up and you're not talking to each other, and then eventually you come together and you hug and you say you're sorry and all the rest of it. Your relationship is stronger because of that. Because you've healed, you've scabbed over, and you're stronger because of it. And the same can happen with your patients. There have absolutely been instances in my life that dental patients who have been very unhappy then become our greatest advocate, because we managed to move with them through a difficult scenario, maintaining trust likability. So don't resist them. These the management of unhappy customers helps you develop skills around dealing with difficult people, and it can actually end up making them, the patient, a whole lot more likable to you and you to them. Now, the issue around refunding fees for services, sometimes a patient is unhappy with a particular service and demands a refund, and these are my thoughts around it. I remember when I owned my practice and there was a beautiful dentist that worked with us. And she was such a good rapport builder. And she was clinically so excellent. It was very rare that anyone would have had a complaint. There was one particular patient. This is back in the day when we did PFM crowns. This patient had a tooth that needed a crown done. The tooth had been dead for a while. It wasn't a PFM issue, sorry. It just had been dead for a while. Did the crown. Of course, there was a dark halo over the tooth showing through the gum a little bit. The dentist explained this carefully to the patient. The patient was 24. Their first appointment time, she turned up with her mum for the crown insert appointment time. The mum wasn't there. Patient said she was happy with the appearance. Crown was cemented permanently. The next thing, the mother's ringing up, we want a refund. What's the dark halo? Didn't expect that. That was all explained to the patient, of course. Patient agreed that, yep, that's all. I understand all of that. Cement away. We didn't realise that we really weren't dealing with the patient's satisfaction and expectations. We're dealing with the mother's, and the mother should have been there at the insert appointment time, quite likely. This patient was threatening to go to the board to make sure that she got a refund for that treatment. The stance that the dentist had is totally understandable. Often it feels like a personal affront. And it feels like that dentist is saying, I did a bad job if I say I'm going to refund your money to you. That's what it feels like. It feels like you're saying, I did wrong, and that's why I'm giving you your money back, because I admit that I did wrong. But that's not why you're giving money back. You really are just buying your way out of an issue that will get worse. If someone's threatening or already has gone to the dental board, you don't know how far they're going to take it and how upset they're going to be and how many people they're going to tell. So what you want to do is, rather than see that refund of service as an admission of wrongdoing, which it's not, you are refunding that amount of money because you are buying closure to the issue. Whenever these sort of situations, back in the day, you know, the Victorian Dental Board were great. Their website, you could actually look through previous decisions that the board had made around issues like this. And every single time I would read that there was a refund, that it was advised that the dentist give a refund. Whether they were in the wrong or not, it was always advised that you give the patient a refund. Now, my mind frame around that, my thoughts around that are what you are intending, what your intentions are as a dentist is to not just perform the service, but you are also intending for the patient to be happy with the service. And so you're not refunding because the service was bad, you're refunding because the patient was unhappy. And that's the only reason you do. And so when you send a refund off to somebody with an explanation letter, I recognize the fact that you are unhappy with the result, despite it being clinically correct. Because you're unhappy, I am happy to refund you your money so you can seek other assistance in getting that treatment replaced. The last thing you want is for the patient to then come back and say, no, now I want you to, I don't want you to just refund my money, but you need to pay for the specialist to do my treatment as well. So a very quick resolution, and one that the dental board will likely advise you to do anyway, should it be taken to that level, is refund them the money. There was a case that we even refunded six veneers as well. And I tell you, it was a different dentist, but the same sort of feelings. I just can't do it. I can't do it. It's like I'm admitting fault. No, you're not. You are just moving through this very quickly, because I tell you what, the stress that was involved for the original dentist wasn't worth the £1 fee. Get rid of the problem. And so I always say, whenever you provide a refund, provide a refund, but also accompany it with a referral to a specialist. Don't just leave them hanging with a result that they're unhappy with. So here's your refund. Now I suggest here's a referral for a specialist prosthodontist that you can go off and get treatment done by them for replacement of a crown. And if you don't want to see the patient anymore, also provide an exit strategy. As I say, the board will advise a refund anyway. So have that as your first go-to place if a patient is that level of upset. But don't think it's an admission of fault, because I promise you it's not. It's an alleviation of a stressful time. Checking in on my time. We're going well for time. And now we are about to eject a difficult patient from the practice. How do we do that? There are two ways to eject a difficult patient from the practice. Number one is your gradual release. And a gradual release I used every now and again in my practice in Brighton. Just become difficult. Become a bit of a challenge to do business with. So every now and again, you'll have patients that are very difficult, but they're not to the degree where you would actually eject them. They haven't done anything dramatic enough to be ejected. We had one particular patient that I think he was, becoming more judgmental in his older age. He would come in and criticize the nurses and everybody for their appearance. Oh, you've put on a little bit of weight, and oh, your hair doesn't look all that. So it was just, we just didn't want him there anymore. And so unless it's a toothache or mid-treatment plan, I don't suggest it doing it for that. But for general checkups and things like that, become a practice that you really don't have any free appointment times until weeks away. So even though you may have gaps in the schedule this week, they ring up for an appointment time, you've got it flagged off in your dental software system, and you say, oh, for this patient, we're actually not going to be available, don't have any spare spaces for 2.5 months. Now, that kind of wait is often enough for a patient to go somewhere else. They've had to wait that long for an appointment time a couple of times, and they're like, I need something more urgent than that. I need somebody more available to me than that. So I'm taking it upon myself to go elsewhere. If they're slow to budge, you can then wait the 6 weeks for the next appointment time, or sort of 2.5 months for the next appointment time, the 10 weeks, and then give them a call a week beforehand and say, you know what, the dentist has a seminar that day now, I'm going to have to move that appointment time. And then you move it to a time that's not totally convenient to them. Maybe if they do have an emergency, you say, we don't actually have any vacancies today, but there is a 24-hour dental clinic that's available for emergencies, let me give you their number. I don't particularly like moving difficult patients onto another clinician. It doesn't feel like a good vibe, a good karma thing to do. Otherwise, it may come back and you'll be starting to get other people's difficult patients. But certainly providing them other opportunities. There's a whole range of dental practices out here that could possibly better serve you. And so that's one way. You just become a little bit difficult to manage, to deal with, to be a patient of. The second way, other than gradual release, is quick release. And quick release is when there has been a dispute of some kind, a difficulty, they're not appeased by any solution that you've provided, or they are appeased, but you're like, I'm never seeing this patient again. They cause me such stress and such grief. I don't want to see this patient ever again. Then it's time for a pretty direct letter. And this is what I drafted up earlier. Dear patient, we are contacting you regarding your complaint of our recent management of your dental treatment, dental visit, invoice, dental appointment, whatever the case may be. We acknowledge that the issue has been troubling for you and we understand why. See that? We understand why. So you don't have to complain to us anymore. We get it. Despite our best efforts, we have not managed to satisfy your expectation. Trust is a crucial element to the successful relationship between a patient and a clinician. It is our assertion that this trust has suffered to such a degree that effective management of your oral care at this practice is no longer possible. Below you will see a list of three dental practices that you may wish to choose to contact for your future dental care. Once you have decided, provide us with details of the practice and we will forward your dental records directly. Practice number one, practice number two, practice number three. Patient, we are regretful that we have not been the ideal practice for you. However, we do wish you the best for your future dental health management. Yours sincerely. And that's a pretty direct letter. Once it's sent out, you can then flag that patient offers never to be seen again. And if they do try to ring back and rebook an appointment time, just reiterate, unfortunately, our relationship has come to an end because there's no more trust between us from either side. So it's now time to move on. So if you've got any patients that are really have done their dash with you and you are thinking never, never again, that could be an effective letter that you can use to send out. Hopefully this episode has helped our member with future management of difficult patients. And, you know, get a system down pat. I was mentioning before, if a, which point was I thinking back to? Yeah, delay the solution. The minute you can say to a patient, okay, I get it. I get what your issue is. I'm not the one to come up with a solution straight away. I think I need to discuss it with the dentist. I think I need to discuss it with the receptionist. But I will find a solution for you, so let me get back to you. You just want to be able to get that headspace and time to consider and collaborate. And so that's an important element of it. I will jump back to our Trello board and tick off two last remaining items from the agenda. Do remember to register yourself if you are going to be continuing this journey with us as either a club basic member or a full club member. It would be great to have you on board. I really do enjoy sending out these live sessions and I certainly hope you are getting great value from them. If you're in a financial position where you can't manage it at the moment, tap in the discount code of ASSIST and you'll get another 6 months free of charge. Hopefully that will be helpful for you. I thank you so very much for being with me tonight and I do look forward to, I'm just going to have a look to see who's here. Beautiful. Hopefully I think I know who that is. Not many people attend the live sessions. I always appreciate it when you do. It's nice to have a bit of company, but I hope you, the rest of you do enjoy the recording and let me know if you've got any other specific issues around managing difficult patients and if I can be of any further assistance in that space for you. Have a lovely evening and I look forward to checking you next time. See you later.